Welcome to the Digital Identity Digest, the audio companion to the blog at Spherical Cow Consulting. I'm Heather Flanagan, and every week I break down interesting topics in the field of digital identity, from credentials and standards to browser weirdness and policy twists. If you work with digital identity but don't have time to follow every specification or hype cycle, you're in the right place. Let's get into it. All right. Let's be honest right now. This episode is not the most exciting thing you are going to hear today. I'm not doing any like weird predictions. I'm not doing hot takes. I'm not doing any big countdown to, you know, the next big thing in authorization. If you're listening for that, you might want to cue this and come back later. What this actually is more of a reference episode. So I spent a lot of time following and participating in standards development across a handful of standards development organizations, or SDOs. Organizations like the OpenID Foundation, the W3C, the IETF, and I don't participate in, but I do follow the FIDO Alliance. So these groups are some of the critical groups that shape the future of digital identity and technology in general in very real ways, but they do it differently, right? They have different cultures, they have slightly different processes, they have different instincts about how ideas should turn into specifications that developers can actually use. So if you've ever wondered why one group talks about, quote unquote, drafts in a way that sounds nothing like another group's drafts, or why something feels real in one venue but still very tentative in another, this episode is going to explain why. Now, over the coming months, I'm actually planning to go much deeper into very specific working groups and specifications that matter to the digital identity ecosystem. And when I do, rather than repeating myself about how standards are published, and I'm going to be pointing back to this post because I'm going to be talking a lot about where work sits in its life cycle, what kind of feedback is being sought, and how close or how far the thing is from becoming something implementers can actually rely on. So yeah, rather than re-explaining the process every single time, this episode and the companion blog post, which may be more interesting as far as references go, is meant to be just a standing reference, something that I can point back to and say, this here is the baseline. This is how these organizations turn idea into published standards, where exploration happens, who gets to participate, and how decisions are made. Now, if you already live and breathe standards work, a lot of this will be very familiar to you. If you're newer to it, or you've only participated in one standards organization and you're not really sure how the other guys do it, this should help explain why. Two documents, both labeled draft, can mean very different things depending on where they come from. So yeah, grab a beverage because this is going to be pretty dry. So let's start with the big picture. All four of the organizations I'm talking about, the OpenID Foundation, the W3C, the FIDO Alliance, and the IETF, produce things we casually call standards. But that doesn't mean the same thing, and they don't all get there the same way. So some of these organizations are membership-based. Some are open to anyone. Some emphasize formal voting. Others rely almost entirely on consensus. Some are deeply focused on deployability and security assurances. Others are optimized for wide interoperability and long-term evolution. So I did a post a few months ago on what it means to be an open standards organization. You might want to go back and refer to that because all of these fall into that category in various ways, shapes, and forms. None of these models is inherently better. They're just optimized for different kinds of problems. And so that's why I put together a comparison chart in the written post to make these differences a bit more visible side by side. But for audio, what's going to matter more is kind of the shape of each process and what it tells you about how the work moves. So let's go through them one by one. We'll start with the OpenID Foundation. So the OpenID Foundation is membership-based, but participation in the working groups is fairly open once you agree to the intellectual property policies. Work happens in formally chartered working groups. A group forms around a specific scope and set of deliverables, and that scope matters very much. Once the group is up and running, technical work starts with contributions from approved participants. When those contributions are adopted, they become working group drafts. These drafts can iterate for quite a while. There's no forced timeline. The group works until there's enough consensus to say, this is stable enough for implementers to start testing. And that's when a draft may advance to what the OpenID Foundation calls an implementer's draft. It's a very important signal, but it doesn't mean that the work is done. It does, however, mean that the group wants real-world feedback, not just theoretical discussion. Now from there, with additional reviews and approvals, both within the working group and across the foundation membership, a specification may become a final specification, and at that point is considered stable. Changes after that are limited to errata, which are fixes and clarifications, not new features. Now, the OpenID Foundation process is designed to kind of balance innovation with stability, and that group is very comfortable with iteration, but it's also very careful about when something gets labeled final, because that label carries a lot of weight for implementers. Okay, moving on to the W3C. Now, the W3C process will feel familiar if you've spent time around web platforms, but it does have its own rhythm. One important difference right away is that the work in the W3C often starts before there's a working group. Now, that early exploration frequently happens in community groups, and those are open. Anyone can participate, but they are explicitly not on the standards track. They exist to explore ideas, to test assumptions, and to see whether there's enough interest and clarity to justify more formal work. If and when the work is ready, it may move into an existing working group or trigger the creation of a new one. That working group is then formally chartered with a defined scope, deliverables, and success criteria. Now, once you're inside a working group, the document progresses through working drafts, and these are explicitly incomplete. They are expected to change. Now, as a draft matures, it goes through broader and broader review, not just by the working group, but through what the W3C calls horizontal review. That includes looking at accessibility, internationalization, privacy, security, and overall web architecture. Now, when a specification is considered feature complete, it advances to what's called a candidate recommendation. Now, this is where implementation experience really, really matters. And the question becomes, can this actually be built interoperably by more than one party? Now, after that, with sufficient evidence and resolution of issues, a specification may advance to proposed recommendation and then finally on to a W3C recommendation. Now, the W3C process is optimized for the web as a whole. It's very careful, it's very deliberate, and it's deeply invested in the long-term interoperability across a very large ecosystem. I am zipping through these. All of this has ever so much more gory detail involved, but I'm giving you a flavor of what each of them are like. And if you are an active participant, you're probably going, no, but wait, there's this detail. You're absolutely right. There is. Strongly recommend you look at the written post on this one. Okay, let's move to the FIDO Alliance. So the FIDO Alliance looks a bit different from both the OpenID Foundation and the W3C, and that is intentional. FIDO is strongly member-driven, with participation and voting rights tied to membership class. All deliverables are developed within board-chartered working groups, and those groups are led by board-appointed chairs. Work begins with a pre-draft submitted by a participant, and with approval, that becomes a working draft. As the work matures, it can advance to review draft status, which triggers broader review across the membership, and for specifications, a formal intellectual property review period. Now from there, a specification may advance to implementation draft status, but only with a supermajority approval from the FIDO board. This is a pretty strong signal that the work is ready for real-world implementation and interoperability testing. The highest level of maturity within FIDO is proposed standard specification, which again requires a supermajority board approval. And at that point, the work may also be submitted to external standards bodies, like the W3C, with appropriate intellectual property commitments. The standards ultimately are all freely available, which is what puts this in the class of open standards organization, but participation is gated. So that's something important to remember. Overall, FIDO's process emphasizes deployability, security, and clarity around intellectual property. It's deliberately conservative about when work advances because the consequences of getting authentication wrong are generally pretty high. And then there's the IETF. Now, the IETF is different enough that it almost needs its own mental model, and that's in part because it's been around longer than any of the others. So participation is open to anyone. There is no membership. You participate as an individual, not as a company representative. That's the official story. And the participation is governed by something called the Note Well, which outlines intellectual property disclosure requirements and community conduct expectations that apply simply by contributing. And contributing means sending an email, stepping up to the microphone and offering a comment, or submitting a draft. Most work happens in chartered working groups, but before a working group exists, individuals can request a Birds of a Feather session, also known as BOFs. These are time-limited meetings in that you can have up to three of them, and they're used to either explore a topic informally, or in the case of a working group forming BOF, to develop and test support for a proposed charter. All IATF specifications start life as internet drafts. There were capital letters, by the way, around that, internet draft. These are openly published. They are time-limited documents that can change very frequently. A draft might be written by an individual or adopted by a working group. Adoption does not mean approval. It just means that the working group agrees to work on it. Decisions are made by rough consensus, not by formal voting. Working group chairs assess whether there is sustained agreement and whether objections have been adequately addressed. Silence does not automatically equal consent. When a draft is ready, it goes through review by the Internet Engineering Steering Group, or the IESG, and approved documents are then published by the RFC editors as RFCs. Now, not all our RFCs are standards. Some are informational, some are experimental. Standards track documents typically progress from proposed standard to internet standard based on demonstrated interoperability and operational stability. Now, RFCs, they don't change. They're immutable. Once they're published, that's it. They're done. Updates happen by publishing new RFCs that update or obsolete earlier ones. You can look at it as the IATF is prioritizing openness, deployability, and what it famously calls running code. So yeah, at this point, you might be tempted to ask, so which process is right? And the answer is, that's not how this works. I mean, choosing where to take work is rarely about process, right? There's no clean lines dividing one standards body from the other. Authorization specifications might reasonably fit in the IATF or the OpenID Foundation. User-facing authentication or account selection might land in the W3C or the FIDO Alliance. Sometimes work spans multiple domains, and sometimes, as with a particular specification called WebAuthn, it spans multiple organizations at the same time. What tends to matter are more practical questions. Questions like, who needs to be in the room? Where does the problem naturally live? At the protocol layer, at the platform layer, or at the user experience layer? How mature is the idea, and how much risk can the ecosystem tolerate? Is there existing momentum in a particular group, and is there willingness to collaborate across organizational boundaries? Ultimately, standards work does tend to follow people and problems more than it does these kind of org charty things. So it is kind of messy. Standards development is rarely a linear process. It's almost never confined neatly to a single organization. That's why these organizations always have liaison agreements with each other, just to make sure there's no one trying to do a runaround because they didn't like how they were treated in one organization, so they go somewhere else. The process I've described provides structure and guardrails, but they don't determine where good ideas come from or where meaningful progress happens. Now, as I dig into the specific working groups and specifications over the coming months, I'll refer back to this episode to help frame and stage what stage the work is in, what kind of feedback is being sought, and what progress actually means in the context of getting it published. This is not meant to be an exhaustive list. It will not age perfectly, and that's fine. Standards evolve, processes get revised, and communities shift. So think of this as a shared reference point, something to return to when the details start to blur a bit, and you need some help to zoom out and remember how it all fits together. And with that, if you stayed this long, thank you for sticking with a very dry, very practical episode. And next time, I promise something a little bit more opinionated. And that's it for this week's episode of the Digital Identity Digest. If it helps make things a little clearer, or at least a little more interesting, share it with a friend or colleague and connect with me on LinkedIn at HL Flanagan. And if you enjoyed the show, do be sure to subscribe and leave me a rating and review on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen to podcasts. You can also find the written full post at sphericalcowconsulting.com. Now stay curious, stay engaged, and let's get these conversations going.